I like the diverse and dynamic approach of the firm, and I think it helps the associates grow at the direction that they are good at and they want to go.
Welcome to IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield. Aya Cheshlock Tochigi is an associate in Wolf Greenfield's New York office. She focuses her practice on all aspects of trademark and copyright law and works closely with a range of clients from startup businesses to multinational corporations. Aya has extensive experience representing various clients over the years in the apparel, footwear, and luxury goods industries for trademark and copyright matters. Most recently, she was part of the Thom Browne trial team that successfully defended trademark infringement and dilution claims against Adidas. Aya, welcome. Thanks for joining us. Tell us a little bit about your work at Wolf Greenfield.
I do a mix of litigation, enforcement, prosecution, and counseling for trademark and copyright clients. The industries for those clients really vary. Like the Thom Browne case, I represent fashion clients. I also represent food and beverage, real estate, financial, pharmaceutical, and tech companies as well. The variety of clients and matters that I do are really enjoyable, and I really like working at Wolf.
You joined the firm last year. What attracted you to Wolf Greenfield?
I've heard a lot of great things about the firm before joining the firm, especially about the trademark practice group from a colleague who joined the firm several months before me. I really like that everyone works with everyone rather than one associate supports one partner type of a model, because you get exposure to different types of clients and matters. And you can really learn from different people's styles and approaches towards different issues. So I like the diverse and dynamic approach of the firm. And I think it helps the associates grow at the direction that they are good at and they want to go. I also like that firm is big on encouraging everyone on doing their own business development and be involved in speaking engagements. I've had the opportunities to speak at several conferences and seminars within one short year since I joined the firm, and I really appreciate that, and I feel supported by the firm.
Shortly after joining Wolf Greenfield, you were quickly busy with presentations, including one in Japan at the Comparative Patent Practice Conference. What do you enjoy about the international aspect to your practice?
As I'm originally from Japan and Japanese is my native language, having an international aspect, especially in regards to clients and events in Japan, that's really important for me. In my college application, I wrote that I wanted to be a bridge between the US and Japan, actually. I didn't know what that meant when I wrote it, but I am in a way materializing that goal as an intellectual property lawyer, helping clients from Japan to expand their business in the US. And at the same time, because I have the extensive experience helping clients from the US extend and protect their rights in other countries, I understand the client's needs from the global perspective, and I enjoy having this international aspect in my practice.
Some of the key differences in the U.S. trial system and our IP, the way our IP law works compared to other countries?
The biggest difference in the trademark side is that in the U.S., trademark rights come from using the mark. So in the U.S., you do not necessarily need to own a trademark registration to enforce your mark. This is called common law rights. In other countries, you need a trademark registration to enforce the mark or institute litigation at court. However, I can say that in any country, it is still important to have your mark registered, especially in the US, where the concept of goodwill is more recognized than other countries. The value of trademarks as a corporate asset cannot be ignored, especially in transactional context. So regardless of where the client is located, having a registration is not only important, but also can become crucial in enforcing the rights, as well as when it comes to selling or buying your business. Another key difference is that the use of jury trial. A jury trial is typically used for criminal cases in many other countries. When I host seminars and speak about my trial experience, I almost always get at least some questions about the jury. People watch legal dramas on TV and they expect to a certain degree some type of entertainment out of trial. But as a lawyer, we don't always know who the audience, meaning the jurors, will be. We don't know their background, and we don't have any data point. Unlike judges, we can read their decisions and rules to get some sense of their style before we go into the courtroom. So people outside of the U.S. are interested in learning how the jury system works in the U.S. because it is so different from other countries, and they need our help to navigate the system.
And how did you become so involved in fashion and apparel?
I was fortunate to have several mentors along the way in my career who had deep knowledge in fashion and apparel. Before college, I worked at a luxury department store and learned a bit from the retail side of business. And before law school, I worked at an immigration law firm, mainly supporting artists and designers from other countries to obtain special visas in the U.S. When I began my law career, I worked closely with some of the distinguished trademark gurus, especially in fashion, working on trademark and copyright enforcement and litigation matters. IP law can sound very technical, and it sounds nothing like an artsy field, but it actually can be. I like the creative thinking we do every day for our clients, not just for fashion and apparel, but when you deal with clients in the creative fields, you see the intersection of arts, fashion, and law. When fashion designers make new fabric patterns, for example, they don't always think about registering the patterns as a copyright. At least that's not the first thing they typically think about. When a new invention is created, patent is almost always on the inventor's minds. So educating the designers on how they can protect their designs and rights has been really fun, but it's also a challenge for the industry as a whole.
Working on high-profile cases always brings some learning moments for everyone. You were involved with the Tom Brown case, which was very big for Wolf Greenfield. What did you take away from that experience?
I learned a lot of things from that case. Having deep knowledge on the client as well as the industry is crucial and critical when creating themes for the trial and arguments in general. Knowing the applicable law is, of course, important, but especially when you're facing a jury trial, you need to tell your client's story. And in order to tell their story that resonates with the jury, you really need to understand where the client's business comes from. As I mentioned earlier, you don't know the jury's background, and we don't necessarily know what would resonate with them. Working closely with Tom Brown himself to prepare for his testimony, I thought his story had many aspects that anyone can relate to. He came from a middle-class family with five other siblings. He went to college and graduated with a degree, but he didn't know what to do with it. And then he moved away from home to find his passion and dream. He had financial struggles during the early stage of his career as a fashion designer, but here he is with his successful brand. So he had stories that I thought many people could relate to in one way or the other. So learning about the client, not just from the legal perspective, that was critical to craft what we wanted to tell the jury at trial. I joined the firm about a year ago, but I also represented Tom Brown earlier in my career. So I knew their collections and designs from about 7-8 years ago. It felt like a full circle being on the case, reviewing their past designs, relearning their design inspirations, and presenting at trial. So it was such a special case for me.
The 1989 case Rogers versus Grimaldi set a standard for trademark infringement for expressive works like movies. And what's become known as the Rogers test has been involved in a lot of big name cases, in particular the Hermes versus Rothschild case. Can you explain a little bit about the Rogers test, what it is, and how it applies to this case?
Just to briefly recap on this case, the plaintiff is a well-known French luxury brand with an iconic Birkin bag, Hermes. The defendant is a digital artist who created what he called Meta Birkins, non-fungible tokens or NFTs. And he posted those NFTs on the Meta Birkin's Instagram account. Hermes sued Rothschild for trademark infringement, among others. Rothschild claimed that his NFTs did not infringe Hermes's trademarks, and instead his speech right of the or right to artistic expression under the First Amendment trumps. The case went to a jury trial, and they found that Rothschild infringed Hermes's trademarks. There are a couple of things we, especially those in the luxury industry, can learn from. The first is that based on this case, NFTs can qualify as an artistic expression, Although the jury found that Rothschild NFTs infringed, if the facts were different, it is possible that the First Amendment defense, or what is called the Rogers test, can apply to NFTs. So going back to what Rogers test is, there's a bit of a collision between the interests that we are trying to protect under the Lanham Act and the First Amendment. Under the Lanham Act, the public is protected from consumer confusion resulting from unlawful use of similar marks. On the other hand, the First Amendment protects our freedom of speech and expression, among other things. So Hermès wants to protect their trademark rights, and the public should be protected from consumer confusion that can arise from Rothschild's use of Meta Birkins for NFTs. On the other hand, Rothschild's claimed that what he created is an art, and his First Amendment should be protected over the third party's trademark rights. Here, the court found that Rogers test applies, and it's a two-part test. First, the court asks whether there's any artistic relevance, meaning whether the defendant intended an artistic and non-commercial association with the plaintiff's mark. This is a low threshold, and the level of relevance merely has to be not zero. If the court finds that there is such artistic relevance, then it asks whether the product explicitly misleads for the public to believe that the use of trademark on the product is authorized. If the consumer confusion is so clear and unambiguous, then the First Amendment rights do not override, and there can be trademark infringement. And in this case, one of the takeaways is that when an artist incorporates a third party's trademark in one off image or just one NFT art piece, then the Rogers test may apply. But once they start creating NFTs by trading off on another's trademark, then it becomes more of brand-driven NFTs, meaning the NFTs will have value because of the underlying recognition of the third party's brand. That would likely take the artistic expression out from the NFTs. And this is what happened here. There were some evidence indicating that Rothschild intended to benefit from the recognition and goodwill in Hermès's Birkin name. He didn't use the Meta Birkin name because he needed it for his artistic expression, but he was trying to trade off of the brand value Hermès's Birkin name had. So I expect to see more cases applying the Rogers test in the context of digital fashion and digital art going forward based on this case.
How will digital fashion content potentially impact trademark and copyright issues?
We saw an uptick in trademark filings for NFT products and metaverse-related services in 2022, but the interest seems to be generally declining. That being said, I still see a lot of interest in NFTs and metaverse in general from the fashion industry. There was the second Metaverse Fashion Week at the end of March, and many fashion designers participated in this. As we discussed in the Hermès case, the luxury fashion brands are still exploring ways to incorporate the digital fashion into their brands. They're interested in the digital fashion because of sustainability. The consumers can experience a variety of fashion without the need for the physical products. And also the designers can experiment and sort of predict early sales reactions to their new collections. So my prediction is that the fashion brands will at least continue experimenting the digital fashion and incorporate some aspects of NFTs and metaverse in the next several years. What is interesting is that in the real world, it is extremely hard to copyright fashion designs unless we're talking about fabric patterns and such. But the digital fashion designs on metaverse, for example, if they have sufficient artistic expressions, that may be protectable under copyright. So I think that's a good news for fashion brands, and that's something that they might be able to use to protect their IP rights. With the AI-generated designs, I expect to see some ownership issues when the garments are made digitally by a software company. If there is no agreement set up between a software company and designers, the software company can arguably own rights to the codes for the 3D garments. And such digital garments can be used as the underlying pattern to create clothing in real life as well. So clarifying who owns the rights to the physical garment, as well as who owns the copyright over the 3D designs, that would be important in enforcing the rights and protect the copyright holders from diluting their exclusive right to reproduce.
Finally, I understand you've been mentoring students at the Fashion Institute of Technology. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience there?
Yes. This year, I will be leading workshops and mentoring students who participate in the PEAT competition at Fashion Institute of Technology in New York City. PEAT is an acronym for passionate, empathetic, tenacious, and enthusiastic. It's a competition for a student award that recognizes fresh and creative ideas and translate them into business plans with a $30,000 cash award and access to industry experts. I will be mentoring students who participate in this competition and give them advice on how to protect their designs and their business names and such. This is an excellent opportunity for students who are interested in entrepreneurship to talk to young designers and see their fresh designs. That's really exciting.
Our thanks to Aya Cheshlak-Tochigi for joining us on this episode of IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield. We hope you'll subscribe to our series of conversations related to IP matters on Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information on legal matters related to IP, we invite you to visit our website at www.wolfgreenfield.com. Thanks again for joining us on this edition of IP Talk with Wolf Greenfield.